Boker Tov. We're in a particular time, and we call this time, this month, we call it Elul. And if we want to focus in on a key central theme of this month, we can open a volume. It's called the Sefer HaTodah. Some of you are nodding. You're familiar with this volume from a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Eliyahu Ki Tov. It was translated into English. I forget the name of the English translation. And he gives you every month key themes. What's that? The Book of Our Heritage. Thank you. Key themes of that month. So what does Rabbi Eliyahu Ki Tov remind us is the key theme of this month? Ani ledodi vidodi li, the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Roshei Tevos, which is the acronym of Elul, Aleph Lamed Vav Lamed. I am for my beloved, and my beloved is for me. So what is that meaning? What is that connotation? What is that feeling? So Rabbi Ki Tov restates what many of us know. Shebechodesh zeh, Knesset Yisrael, I'm in the first source, Mischazekes b'tshuva. We are mischazek, we return in tshuva. So our theme for these 3 weeks is going to be tshuva. But I want to think about it through a specific lens. So let's do this with an exercise. Let's take a step back. If I were to ask you, what are some of the distinctions, the fundamental distinctions between human beings and animals? What are distinctions? Because we have a lot in common. We eat, we sleep, we communicate, we have some. What's that?
Communication is, you can't just put that in the both worlds sections.
Well, we definitely both communicate. We both do communicate. Dolphins communicate with sounds. Lobsters communicate non-verbally and with, you know, movements. You know, we definitely communicate, and we both have some measure of intelligence. So what is it that distinguishes people from animals?
Intellectualization.
Okay, so intellectualization, great. I'll put this. Okay. Intellect, let's take that a little further. What exactly does that mean when we talk about intellect, yeah?
Speech
is one, great. What's that?
Free will.
Free will, okay. Why is that a differentiation? Exactly, animals have instincts that determine their decision-making, as opposed to a higher level of thought process. Okay, what else? Okay. So I want to understand in English, how do you characterize what that means? Well, how is that expressed practically? That's what I'm wondering. Okay, spiritual, what does that mean?
Morality.
What's that?
Morality.
Okay, maybe morality, nice. What do you mean when you say morality?
What is right?
Okay, right and wrong, meaning a value system. So, values. Because if you are a creature, creatures don't operate based on, let's say, lobsters. There's a very interesting discussion in in the beginning of Jordan B. Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life, which is an excellent and thoughtful work. Very dense, but very worthwhile to think about. So he talks about the hierarchy of lobsters and how they move about their ecosystem and control. And, you know, it's not that one lobster says to the other, you know, Nebuch, you didn't have a nice upbringing. You didn't have a warm, hospitable home in which to be nurtured. So we have to provide you some kind of support. That doesn't exist in the lobster kingdom. And it doesn't exist when sharks encounter minnows and things like that. There is no value system. It's just a predatory survival of the fittest, instinct-based process. Great. What else? What else is unique? Maybe you could even break it down further in the concept of intellect. What type of intellect do we have that animals don't seem to have?
Thoughts.
What kind of thoughts? Animals obviously have some thoughts. They have thoughts that are happening.
Emotional thoughts.
Okay. So what kind of emotional thoughts? So obviously animals feel pain, which is why they react to different situations so that they can avoid pain, right? The Skinner experiments, the rats don't want to touch the levers if they're going to be shocked. So obviously they have some kind of emotion, but not the same kinds of emotions. I think Rabbi Soloveitchik distinguished between pain and suffering. Suffering is a human experience, or maybe we could call it joy. Do animals experience joy? They might experience contentment, but they probably don't experience joy. Do animals have a sense of time? Or more importantly, do they have a sense of history? Do animals think, you know, my great-great-grandfather came from Poland and migrated to the Midwest, so I really identify with other animals of my species that came from Poland. I don't know. I never interviewed, you know, any of the animals in the Lincoln Park Zoo. I wonder, Bechlal, what they would be saying in the Lincoln Park Zoo, the animals, or the Brookfield Zoo, or any other zoo. I never identified, you know, exactly what their thought processes are. But do animals have a sense that their great-great-grandparents came from, you know, Algeria? Like, is there a sense of history there? Is there a sense of... What kind of memory, right? Instinctual memory based on experience or some kind of like residual inherited trait type of, you know, like epigenetic type of thing. Do animals have a sense of growth?
I'm wondering if a sense of purpose beyond, you know, survival.
Beautiful. Do animals have a sense of purpose, right? Does an ant have a sense of purpose other than the built-in, hardwired instinct that says, I need to save for the winter, so I'm going to... And the Rebbe Shlomo gave these creatures just extraordinary, amazing faculties to do what it is that they were programmed to do. But beyond that programming, is there any sense of purpose? Any larger purpose? So a bunch of antelach will gather together to make a big ant hole that they have been, right, that they have been somehow endowed by the Rebbe Shlomo with the instinct to need to do that so that they can protect themselves, right? Do they have a sense of growth that, you know, I had one identity, but I need to develop that identity further? Do they have a sense of identity? I don't know. I can't say with certainty because I'm not a zoologist. But all of these ideas are crucial for us to understand the process of tshuva. Part of tshuva, for example, is the idea of self-reflection. Do animals ever meditate? Do they self-reflect? To think, you know, yesterday when I... You know, I'm a wildebeest. So as a Shane, a wildebeest, I go to the watering hole and I get water. Does an animal ever think, you know, yesterday when I was at the watering hole, Kalman, my wildebeest neighbor over there, he wasn't in such a good mood, but I didn't really pay attention to him. And Shneur Zalman, you know, on the other side, the other wildebeest, he looked like he was having a great day, but I didn't even say, you know, why is that, you know, does that happen at the watering hole in Africa? Do they reflect on what happened yesterday? Or is it whatever they learned yesterday is some kind of biological attunement to their physical surroundings? But is there any sense of identity and self-reflection? So why is this? Why are all of these and many other differentiators? Put this on the list. Why is this a discussion point? Well, because on the one hand, we know as Rabbi Kitov, as he does beautifully and succinctly, he summarizes that Elul Shebechodesh Zeh Knesset Yisrael Mischazekes B'tshuva. The Jewish people are mischazek. We strengthen ourselves in tshuva. Umiskareves ledoda, and we become closer to our beloved, Shehu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Hashem. Va'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu poshe yado lekabla umiskariv eleha. Tshuva is about returning to God. And this month, God presents himself as our beloved, that we can more easily reconnect with him. And that's this period, which is what he points out, that the words ani ledodi vedodi li end with a yud, so the four yuds together comprise the number 40, which takes us from the beginning of the month of Elul until Yom Kippur. That's this period of tshuva, of returning to God. And if you were to ask the average person, I would think you would get this answer, that what is tshuva? Returning to Hashem. And yet, strikingly, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk, Rav Kuk in his Oros HaTshuva, if you look here in source number 2, he points out, HaTshuva HaRashis, the primary, predominant tshuva, the initial tshuva, Shehi Meira Es HaMachashakim Miyad, that illuminates the darkness immediately, instantly. He sheyashuv ha'adam, that the person should return el atzmo, to himself. So I'm thinking, wait a second, which is it? Is it that the person returns to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to God? And if you were to visualize that, you can imagine the person is kind of turning up, looking up, reaching up? Or is a person returning to themselves, looking in, reaching in? Which is it? Well, the answer is, it's both. Rav Kook explains, El Shorish Nishmaso, to the Shorish, the source of our neshama, Umiyad Yashuv Elo Elokim al Nishmas Kol Neshamos, to the soul of all souls. So somehow, when we return to Hashem, we're actually returning to our innermost self. Where does that come from? How do we know that? So someone alluded to it earlier. The pasuk, take a look and turn the page. On source number 3, when we were created, when human beings came into existence, Vayitzar Hashem Elokim es ha'adam afar minu adama, God created, and in this case, God is referred to by two names, Hashem Elokim, created the man, earth, from the ground. Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. God blew into our nostrils a living spirit, vayihi adam lenefesh chaya, and then we became alive. Says the Eilat Kliyakar, in his commentary, he sums it up. He says, ki nishmas chayim, because the living soul, hi hanefesh hamaskeles hanitzchi, that is the eternal, intellectual soul. Who blew into us, so to speak? God blew into us. God blew into us this divine spirit, this neshama. If you were to now think about, who am I, or what am I? Well, I'm a composite, and that's what the Kliyakar goes on to explain, that of course we are a composite of Afar Minu Adama, of physical and spiritual, of Nishmas Chaim. But which is the Ikar? What made us into human beings? Vayihi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. It's that spirit. Similarly, some of you were probably thinking, another way of characterizing this same point is what the pasuk describes, Vayivra Elokim es ha'adam b'tzalmo, b'tzelem Elokim bara oso. The Ribbono Shel Olam created us, B'Tselem Elokim. B'dmus and B'Tselem. What is B'Tselem Elokim? We'll get back to that in 1 minute. But this idea of the person having a neshama, a Tselem Elokim, a spiritual dimension, that is a person's neshama, that comes from Hashem, that's what we're returning to. So maybe, if we have a better understanding of what our Tzelem Elokim, what our Nishmas Chaim, what our Neshama is, who we are deep down, we can understand the process of tshuva. Because if tshuva is about returning to Hashem, who is really the source of that inner spark, as Rav Kook says, the neshama of all the neshamos, the source of all the souls, then that's the goal of tshuva. It's to get back to that. So tshuva, from this perspective, is actually reclaiming our humanity. Because what makes us human is our nishmas chayim, our soul. Just somehow we've degraded that, we've tarnished that, we've lost that. Tshuva is going to be coming back to the Ribono Shel Olam, which for us is the source of everything we are. So now I can understand why this exercise is so important and why my eyes were widened and opened and just blown away this summer when I read another book by Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who we have quoted very often over the years. This is a fascinating work. It's called The Spiritual Self, Reflections on Recovery and God. This book is, it's not published by Art Scroll or any other Jewish publisher. It's published by the Hazelden Foundation, which is a nonprofit helping people reclaim their lives from the disease of addiction. It's a secular book. And in here, he has a definition of spirituality which blew my mind. It's fascinating. Take a look. I believe, see in source number 6, this is on the fourth page, that there is more than just a greater degree of intelligence that distinguishes humans from animals. And that if we analyze humankind and understand that all that we can about our species, thoughts, emotions, behavior, we will find additional features that are uniquely human. On this basis, I would like to coin a definition. All the unique features of a human being in their totality is what constitutes the spirit of a person. When an individual exercises these unique features, he or she is being spiritual. Thus, spirituality is simply the implementation of those distinctive features that separate humans from animals. What an amazing definition of spirituality. So now, if we understand that what really differentiates us from animals is our Nishmas Chaim, our Tzelem Elokim, how do we find that? How do we see that? Says Dr. Twersky, just look at all those features that differentiate us from animals. And those are expressions of manifestations of spirituality of the soul. So that means our speech, our free will, our value system, our joy, our history, our purpose, our self-reflection, our intellectualization, all the things that you said, and more. He has others. He talks about respect of others. He talks about integrity, uniquely spiritual human qualities. What an amazing exercise, and that's what I'd like to focus on for the next few weeks. Is actually exploring some of these themes and realizing that these themes are actually pathways in tshuva. Because if tshuva is about returning to our inner self, to our nishmas chaim, to Hashem, who is the source of all within, then we can identify some of those pathways, and we already have. So let's take a few moments to sharpen up one of them, because it's really interesting. These ideas are expressions of the fact that human beings are unique, of Tzelem Elokim. So how do the Mefarshim, the Parshanim on the Chumash, define Tzelem Elokim? Exactly in light of some of the things that we've been talking about. So Rashi says, what is B'Tzalmenu Kid Musenu? Lahavin ulahaskil, to think, and this is what the Rambam says in the Mor Nevuchim, that what creates Eitzelem Elokim is the capacity for seichel, for intellect, for the higher level cognition. He calls higayon, or hasagas hamuskalos, grasping abstract concepts. Animals do not grasp the arc of history. They don't have that intellectual capability. They don't have that cognition. What makes a Selam Elokim are those abstract ideas, the self-reflection. The Meshech Chachma, and similarly Rav Kook, in an essay called L'Nevuche Hador, they say, you know what the definition of Selam Elokim is? Not just, or not specifically, the fact that we have seichel, intellect. Says the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of Tvinsk, it's Bechira Chavshis. It's free will. And Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, takes it further. This idea, he writes in the Lonely Man of Faith, he says that Selam Elokim is, quote, the inner charismatic endowment as a creative being. It's the notion of creativity. And these, of course, are all linked. The idea to have that we have higher level thinking, abstract thinking, the fact that we have choice, and the fact that we have creativity. And of course, they're all linked to the fact that that neshama, that soul, comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is the source of all values. This is what, later in the book, Jordan B. Peterson points out, that anytime you have a choice, there is an assumption of a value. There are values, and that's what creates the distinctions between the choice. So if we understand that one element of Selam Elokim, of humanity, is this higher level thinking of choosing between values, of having Bechira Chavshis, so now we understand why the concept of choice is, number one, uniquely human, and number two, going to be very important for tshuva. Dr. Twersky makes an amazing ha'ara about the humanity of choice. He has a section on, it's chapter 6, Spirituality and Free Choice. The notion of freedom, the freedom to choose. He points out, what is it about human choices that differ from animal choices? Because animals are going to make choices. Remember that lab rat, right? The Skinner, the Pavlov, those guys doing their experiments with the animals? The animals are going to choose, press the lever or don't press the lever. The question is not whether animals have choices. Of course they have choices. The question is, what kind of choices are they? How do they make those choices? An animal, Dr. Twersky points out, avoids gratifying a biologic drive for one reason. Why does an animal avoid a biologic drive? Right, for the fear of pain. So an animal smells something that doesn't smell good, so the animal has a drive to eat, an innate trait that says, eat, you want to eat, but the animal smells something rancid, so the animal has a biological system that tells it, that alerts it to the fact that that item will cause pain. Zigazun. And the goal of all animals is to live with contentment. Which is, of course, going back to what we said earlier, that our goal, Zigazun, if all our goal is to live with contentment, then that is essentially a bovine existence. You drive by them on the way down to southern Illinois, you see them sitting there, fressing, munching, noshing, right? That's contentment for them. The only thing that drives animals to do or not do something is that biologic push for contentment and that avoidance of pain. Fascinating. So says Dr. Twersky, what makes our choice different than animal choices? If a person avoids gratifying a given biologic drive only out of fear of consequences, this person is still not behaving on a true human level, because as we have seen, animals are also deterred by fear of punishment. What kind of punishment? He says, that's not the point. The person who avoids stealing because of the fear of being apprehended or punished, right, is really no different than the hungry jackal who avoids the carcass that is in the possession of a tiger. Humans function in a unique human capacity by choosing to deny an urge even when there is no possibility of unpleasant consequences. When a decision to deny a biologic drive is based only on principles of right and wrong, a person rises to a supra-animal level. This is when an individual makes a free moral choice, something that is uniquely human and beyond the capabilities of even the most intelligent animal. Making a free moral choice, that is what makes us human. Well, then that is an expression of our neshama. And therefore, it is at the heart of tshuva. Is it surprising, therefore, that the Rambam in the center of Hilchos Tshuva has two chapters devoted to the principle of Bechira Chafshis, of free choice? Because free choice is fundamental to Tshuva. It's not just because if you don't have free choice, you're a machine and you can't be held accountable. It's because one of the most fundamental, if not like the way that the Tzelem Elokim is defined by the Or Sameach and Rav Kook, the fundamental human quality that we have been given is free choice. So then the journey to our humanity is always going to be guided through that gateway of free choice. So now an amazing, amazing idea emerges. What is one avoda for Elul? One avoda for Elul is to lean into our neshama, to be spiritual, to come back to ourself, which means making free moral choices. That is a practical pathway of tshuva. Whenever a person makes a free moral choice, they are tapping into their humanity, to their Tzelem Elokim. Now think about all the choices that we make on a daily basis. And now, oh, we're way out of time. And now we can realize what is an amazing thing that we can be mekabel, that we can focus on in Elul, that really is a step of tshuva, making a free moral choice. There are obviously very, very deep levels of this. You know, on the highest level, tzaddikim, their deep moral choice when it comes to, let's say, eating, is that moral choice is so spiritually connected that their eating is mamish, the highest level of tshuva, of connectedness to Hashem. But even on a not super ethereal, spiritual, tzaddik level, why am I choosing to eat now? Am I choosing to eat to fulfill my biologic urge? Or am I choosing to eat because Hashem gave me this gift of a life that has purpose, and I need to fuel the vessel, the vehicle, to pursue my life goals? Right? Is it an animal choice, or is it a human choice? Is it a Tzelem Elokim Nishmas Chaim Tshuva choice? So maybe one thing that we can do, because we wanted to make this practical, is to make sure that every given day we make one free moral choice, one choice of tshuva, and that we do that intentionally. And by doing that, we can habituate ourselves to listen more closely, to be more conscious of our neshama, of our inner world, of our soul. So when we're encountering somebody, do we stop to make a moral choice, a free moral choice that says, I'm going to be gracious to this person? It's a free moral choice. It's not an animal choice. Or how am I going to spend my time over the next 5 minutes? Or did I create space for gratitude? Right? All of these choices, all of these moral choices, they all reflect our humanity, our connection to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, our neshama. And the more we make those choices, the more we are on the path of tshuva and nurturing our connection to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. So this is step number one, and we're going to talk about other ones next week, is to make one conscious choice a day. One free moral choice, that is the expression of our inner neshama as we build our path of tshuva during this period of Elul.